I'm Christy Potter. I'm a journalist, I'm an author, and I am Going Gray. This show is about all the creative, inspiring, amazing people who are out there every day making the world a more interesting place. Before we get to today's guest, I just wanted to let you all know that my website is scheduled to relaunch this week, so I will keep you posted about that. Also, I just want to thank everyone for the great reviews my debut novel, Oh Brother, has gotten on Amazon and also on Goodreads. I'm really just blown away at how well-received Ariel and the whole gang from the book have been. So I really appreciate that, and I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you. And speaking of books, have you checked out our free deal at audible.com yet? If not, just a reminder, go to audible.com/goinggray for a free one-month membership and an audiobook download. So again, it's audible.com/goinggray. So go and check them out. You know, being a full-time writer it's a very rewarding experience. I can't say that it isn't, but it has also been a major eye-opener for me since I left the newsroom to devote myself fully to my creative writing. I'm alone a lot, and this podcast is about the only thing that keeps me from turning into a crazy cat lady. But it's hard sometimes not to question my success. I sit here in my ripped up jeans in front of the computer, and sometimes I think, what am I doing? It's easier, I think, to consider yourself a success when you are working for someone else, getting a regular paycheck, annual bonuses. But when I'm pacing around my writing room, stuck on a bit of a dialogue, and well-meaning people are emailing me job listings, I start to wonder not only if I am a success, but if I'll ever be a success. Those, of course, are the bad days. On the good days, I sell some books on Amazon, or I pick up a new podcast sponsor, and I feel a little more like a success. But lately, I've begun to wonder if I'm defining success the right way. I mean, I'm living my lifelong dream. I'm doing what I love every day. Doesn't that make me a success? At any rate, these are the questions that have been on my mind lately, which makes the timing of today's guest particularly serendipitous, as you'll see. All right, now let's get to the business at hand. We have a fabulous guest today. I'm really excited to welcome January Jones. January is an author, a humorist, a radio talk show host, a wine tester, a Kennedy expert, a golfer, a mother, a grandmother. January, what did I forget?
Wow, I'm interested to meet this person. Who is she? She's a pretty busy gal, isn't she?
Yeah, seriously, but I appreciate you being here. I have to ask this first because I know I'm not the only one who wondered. Do you often get yourself confused with the Mad Men actress January Jones?
Oh, yeah. It's an interesting story. January Jones, of course, is my writing name, which I started using when I first started writing about the Kennedys. And so everyone thinks that I'm January Jones, the mad, the actress. Now, she's the young, beautiful, talented actress. I'm not her, nor am I. There's an older January Jones. I don't believe she is still alive, but she used to be appear on the Johnny Carson show, and she was billed as an exotic dancer, and the reality was she was a stripper. And she still, there still are some videos of her on YouTube from when she was dancing in the 60s and 70s. And I still find a lot of old men are looking for her.
Wow, that little phone business there as an impersonator.
Yeah, and they contact me, and I break their hearts when I tell them that I'm sorry, I'm not her.
That's hysterical.
Yeah.
All right, so actually, being on Mad Men sounds like about the only thing you don't do. So I'm really excited for my listeners to get to know you. So let's start with your background. Just tell us a little bit about you.
Okay, well, I was born in the Midwest. I'm from Michigan, and I come from a typical alcoholic, dysfunctional Catholic family. which everyone had who grew up in those days. I went to Catholic school all my life. I went to the University of Detroit, which was a Jesuit school, and that's where I was, actually I was taught writing throughout my Catholic education. That's one thing that they do teach you. You learn how to write a sentence. I left Michigan when I was 19, and I went to, became a stewardess, that's what we were called then, for Eastern Airlines. I flew with them for 2 years. I was based in New York, and then I was based in Miami. So I had this fabulous, exciting adventure when I was 20. Then I met my first husband when I was 21, and we got married when I was 22. He was a test pilot in the Navy, and he had set some world records, and he was quite an accomplished test pilot. We were married, and we went on a fabulous honeymoon to Europe, to Switzerland and Italy, first time I had been to Europe. Then we came back and started our Navy career, which was at the Naval Test Center in Patuxent, Maryland. That's where, you know, you read the book, The Right Stuff, and that's where a lot of the astronauts, that's where they came from. As a matter of fact, we lived next door to where the Shepherd, Alan Shepherd, lived. So we knew quite a few of the astronauts, and we met them. Then we were sent to San Diego, and my husband deployed to Vietnam. He served on several aircraft carriers there. We made it through Vietnam, and his squadron, when they went over, there were, I think, 25 pilots in the squadron. Half of them did not come back. They did not make it back. So he made it back, and we felt just so blessed. Then he started testing helicopters for Lockheed, for the Army, for Vietnam. We had, at that time, we had a three-year-old, and we had just had our baby was 6 weeks old, and he was killed on March 12th testing that helicopter, which I had to grow up pretty fast.
Oh, God, I can't even imagine. I literally cannot imagine.
Yeah, I look back on it, and you wonder how you get through those things. I was prepared in some way because I knew a lot of my friends were widows because of Vietnam. So I knew how to do it and how not to do it because I had observed a lot of women struggling with it. The military prepares you, though, because your husband is gone for a year at a time. So you do know how to pay the bills. You do know how to run a home. You do know how to function. I was lucky. I was financially provided for, so I didn't have to go off to work like a lot of widows do. So in that respect, it was not okay, but it seemed to work out. And then 2 years later, I met my second husband. He was an Army helicopter pilot, and he was flying for United Airlines. So my mother was really thrilled to hear I was marrying another pilot.
Oh, yeah. Can't you just go sell insurance or something? Wow.
Yeah. So that's...
You do have a type, I guess.
I didn't hear you.
You must have a type. It appears that you have a type.
Yeah. I'm definitely involved in aviation. I was a stewardess. Both my husbands were pilots. One of my daughter is a pilot, and two of my daughters were flight attendants. So there is a strong aviation thread running through my life. Yes, absolutely.
Wow. All right. So is there anything else you'd like us to know about you going in that I might not cover later? And is that sufficient for your background is what I'm trying to ask?
Oh, yeah. I think my second husband and I, we've been married 44 years now. And he had a son from his first marriage. And, of course, I had the two little girls that he adopted. And then we had a daughter of our own. So we were his, hers, and ours. And we lived in California for 40-some years. And we had several... He flew, and then we had several businesses during that time that I ran. So we kept ourselves very, very busy. My daughters, they look at me now and they say, how did you ever do it? Ooh. And I said, well, I think we drank a lot.
Oh, wow. But it sounds very, it's very Brady Bunch of you.
Yes, it was very Brady Bunch, very, very much so.
Tell us a little bit about your radio show.
Okay, well, the radio show, it's interesting. I'm 3 years into January Jones sharing success stories. Prior to doing that, while I was in California, after I wrote my first books, I was doing radio for Voice America and big media. And it was a different proposition then, because that was quite a few years ago. You had to get dressed up. You had to go to a studio. You had an engineer. You had a producer. It was a big, big deal doing shows then. There was not like Skype or anything like that. It was all done in studio. So I did that for a year or so, and then I kind of got tired of the whole drill. So I thought I was done with radio. Kind of put it on the back shelf, you know, been there, done that. Then I got into it again with Blog Talk Radio, and then I started off with 30 minutes a week. That
wow.
gradually grew and grew and grew. I now have I've had over 1.9 million listeners just on Blog Talk. Then I went with Talk for Media, W4CY.com out of West Palm Beach. Then we were syndicated at iHeart, so I became doing my show on three syndicated networks, which was pretty exciting. It just took on a life of its own. You know, I think the reason it took off is my show is human interest stories, pretty much just like what you're doing. I get people to come on to share their stories, their secrets, their struggles. And believe me, everyone who's successful has struggled.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seemed to resonate with my listeners. And it's been an enjoyable experience. Right now, I only do 3 live shows a week. And those are replayed over 60 times a month.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
My head would explode.
I can't imagine who these people are listening, but I sure enjoy doing it. It's I get to 3 times a week, I get to visit with some of the most amazing people in the world.
Yeah. Everybody has a story. That's what I always say. Everybody has a story.
Oh, yes, they all do. And a lot of people who have written books are very eager to share their stories. And it's been an honor and a privilege to be able to do this. And of course, now I do it in my pajamas like I am right now.
I've been a freelance journalist for a long time since I quit my full-time journalism job, and I actually call it pajama journalism.
Well, it's interesting because my publishing company is called PJ Publishing because we work in our pajamas.
I love it. I love it. We are making a pajama-based society, and it's a long time coming.
Yes.
I'm very happy. Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned about your show being based on success stories. Let's talk about what you think defines success. I'm sure everybody defines it differently. So, I mean, how do you know I'm a success? I finally made it. I succeeded.
Well,
what's a success?
You know, that's the way I end every one of my shows. I ask people, my guests, what success means to them, if they have any regrets or advice. I find that I've done, you know, hundreds and hundreds of interviews. Some of them have been just outstanding, which is why I published my last book, Priceless Personalities, because I chose 10 people whose stories just blew me away. They were the unforgettable ones. Success, in general, is always preceded with struggle. Whoever mm-hmm. becomes successful has struggle. No one, believe me, no one gets it handed to them on a silver platter. Everyone who is successful struggles. Appears to me that the most successful people are people who find their passion. And once they find their passion, it's something they would do for free. It's something they just adore doing. So it no longer becomes work to them. It's something that they love. And usually their passion involves service to others or helping others. And that gets back to the what you give comes back. And it just goes around and around. It's the way the universe works. Most of these people, their success is very personal. And it's not, in general, it's not related to money.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because people, a lot of people define success as being at least financially solvent, and I don't personally think so, but I was very curious to hear you say that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, don't get me wrong, most of these people do want to make a nice living, and there's nothing wrong with that, but their criteria is not owning the home and the cars and the travel and all that. Their criteria is more personal. I think what they get back from serving other people is what makes them feel successful. Also, another big part of success are your personal relationships. The relationships you have with your family, your friends, your children, your grandchildren. Those are the real criterias for true success. The older you get, the more important those things become to you.
Yeah, I can completely agree with that. Now, you talked about the 10 people that you picked out for your book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to talk about any of those people or anybody else that you have met over the years that kind of comes to your mind when you think about truly amazing people.
Well, briefly, I'd love to share the 10 people from Priceless Personalities. This is volume one, and as we speak, we're working on volume two because we've had so many more people that I want to share with everyone. The premise for the book is we had the interviews from my show transcribed and put into book form. The first chapter is Jeannie Kerrigan, and Jeannie is an amazing young woman. She's an incest survivor. She's created an organization called Ricky's Revolution. She was out on the streets when she was 15 just to get away from the abuse in her home. Her journey was difficult because she was on the streets, so she, of course, got into drugs and to prostitution and all the things that young women on the streets end up doing. She finally was abducted by some truck drivers, and when she had been going around with this little tiny bear called Ricky, and he was like her touchstone, and she kept him with her, and she had been abducted, and when she escaped, she left Ricky behind. And she said that was the most traumatic thing that had happened to her.
Oh.
Then she was taken in by the Lakota Indian group. They made her a part of their family. They healed her. So once she was healed, she started and her father, her abuser, he was dying of cancer, and she had healed so well that she was able to forgive him, and she took care of him when he was dying. She then created this Ricky's Revolution, and in a dream, she saw this little bear that she had left behind. And on the bear, in the dream, there were phone numbers embroidered and contact numbers for kids who were on the street who needed help. So she put this bear together, and up to now, she's given over 10,000 of these bears out to children on the streets.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
that is amazing.
Yeah, and she is.
But it's still amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Her book is called Layla, and it's recommended reading. She might be someone you'd like to have on your show. She's fabulous. Chapter two is Stephen Simon, and he produced this classic movie called Somewhere in Time. He grew up in Hollywood, and his father worked for the studios, and his mother was best friends with Nancy Reagan. So he had this amazing career in Hollywood, and he talks extensively about some of his failures and things that didn't go well. He then left Hollywood, and he's created an organization called Spiritual Cinema Circle, and he now puts out spiritual films once a month that he mails out in DVDs. They're all family films. They're the kind of things, the feel-good films that you don't see so much anywhere. He gets them at Sundance, and so he's a fascinating interview. Then we had Susanna Barlow, and she was 23 out of 46 children in a family, a polygamous family.
Wow.
Yeah, so she writes about growing up there, and her book, What Peace There May Be, has received many awards. She's a brilliant writer, and she was home educated, so she never had a formal education. James Mapes is an actor, and he's an imagination expert, and he writes, his interview is amazing, inspiring. He's a man for all seasons. Then I have Sydney Biddle Barrow. She, many years ago, was the Mayflower Madam in New York.
Yeah. Sure.
And her story is interesting because she was convicted, but she was not sent to prison because her little black book had the names of everyone who was important.
I remember that. I forgot about her.
Yeah, yeah. And so Sydney, then she went into, after she got through her disgrace, so to speak, she is now inspirational, motivational speaker, and she concentrates on people going into business. Daniel Blanchard, he is a teacher, inner city teacher in New Jersey, New Jersey. And he's received many awards, and he works with teenagers. The next chapter is Anita Mahaffey, and she had cancer three times, and she had eye cancer where they had to do reconstruction on that portion of her face. So she had quite a journey. Then she organized and became the CEO and entrepreneur of a company called Cool Jams. So she's quite successful. Chapter 8 is Rory Hoffman and Connie Ellis. They were both blind. They were born into a family. Their mother and father had vision, but the four children all were blind. And Connie writes about her brother, who is a successful musician and very talented. But the interview was funny because we started off and it was going to be about her brother, but the real story is Connie, because she is kind of like the cement that holds that family together, and they all had to go to Braille school, and it was very difficult growing up in that time with four blind children. Chapter 9 is Tawana Williams, and her book is called Unarmed But Dangerous, and she was a thalidomide baby born without arms. And this was in the Kennedy years, and her mother didn't know what to do, single mother with this little tiny baby with no arms. Her mother wrote a letter to President Kennedy and asked him at that time, what should I do? How can I take care of this baby? And within 2 weeks, he answered and made arrangements for Tawana to go to a school for handicapped children. So that's a very inspiring story. So those are just some of the highlights that I love sharing with my readers and listeners.
Wow. Like I said, everybody has a story, but sometimes people's stories just make you think, okay.
Yeah.
I thought I had tough times.
That's so true. It's so true. They're all wonderful, inspiring people, and the book is available at Amazon.com, and we are having great success with it, so it's very exciting to be able to share these stories.
Say the title of the book one more time for everybody.
This book is Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones.
Okay, everybody got that, and they can look for that on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about another series of your books, but first I just have to tell you, I really dig your spoke dog, Zoe.
Yeah.
She's a poodle?
No, well, actually, Zoe's a golden noodle, so her father is a standard poodle, and her mother's a golden retriever, so she's got the best of both worlds. She's as beautiful as her father, and she's as gentle and sweet as her mother. She's just the perfect dog for our family.
This is for the listeners. You can find her on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And now she does these little videos, promotion. Tell people who haven't seen her, tell them about Zoe.
Well, you go on YouTube, and her video is called Talking Dog Zoe Speaks of January Jones. And it's a video that we had done with Zoe talking about her mom, me. January Jones, and she very discreetly shares our family story, and she talks about some of my books, and it's really fun. We had a good time putting that together.
And you said Zoe has quite a following now.
Oh, yeah. She's become a YouTube celebrity.
Good for her.
And it's funny because people actually call me and want to talk to her.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're disappointed when she doesn't come to the phone. And I have to explain that she's very spoiled and she only talks when she's on YouTube. She doesn't talk in public.
I got nothing. Yeah, wow. But good for her, you know. I mean, a woman can't just respond to every public demand for an appearance.
It's so true.
Now, you know, I'm going to have to ask you about the Kennedys.
Mm-hmm.
Your book, Jackie, Ari, and Jack, and the Christina, they look like they're doing really well, and America really hasn't lost its fascination for the Kennedys. So tell us how you became a Kennedy file.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wrote the first book, Oh No, Jackie, Oh, when I was 50 years old. So that is 20 years ago, I'm proud to reveal. I had never written a book before in my life. When I was probably in my 40s, my charity group had a psychic come visit, and we were chatting, and he said to me, he said, "Well, oh, well, you're going to be a writer." And I said, "Oh, really? What am I going to write about?" And he said, "Well, when the time comes, you will know. And it's going to happen when you're 50 years old. But by the way, you're not going to be successful till you're in your late 60s.
Well,
so I said to him, "Wow, I could start tomorrow if I knew what to write about." And he said, "You'll know." Well, of course, I did know what to write about because I was a 25-year-old widow with two small children. I walked behind a flag-draped coffin. I was during the Kennedy years. I was a Jackie file, just like everyone else in the country. Everyone tried to talk like her, dress like her. She was our idol. None of us knew what was really going on with her. None of us knew about the tragedy of her marriage and her reluctance to be such a public figure. So I was fascinated with her, and I kept reading and reading about her. I had an extensive Kennedy library of my own, and I started just reading, and all of a sudden, having been a young widow and having seen Jackie remarry and the life she went into when she married Onassis, I kind of came up with a theory that you probably have never heard before. It's a controversial theory, and I've done over 500 radio shows and television shows talking about the theory. And basically, my theory connects Jacqueline Kennedy with Aristotle Onassis before the assassination of John Kennedy. My theory is that Onassis was the money man behind that assassination because he wanted Jackie. He wanted to have Jackie as the crown jewel of his collection. And guess what? He got her.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet that's controversial.
Quite controversial. My book names the shooter. It also, the shooter was in Dallas that day with two other men, and my book says it's a triangular shooting. They were stopped that day, and when they were leaving Dallas, they were stopped, but they were not detained, and they left the country and flew to Canada and back to Europe. I connect them to the mafia, but it's the mafia in Europe who Onassis was well connected with. I feel that Onassis put up the money, and he basically said, "I want you to commit the perfect crime." And guess what? 50-some years later, we're still asking who killed Kennedy.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by that theory. It never even crossed my mind, but that's a very interesting theory. Now, that's your book of Jackie, Ari, and Jack, right?
Yes, and that book is also available at Amazon. And it's in paperback and it's in audio. And we've just put it into audio this last year with the 50th anniversary. And it's doing quite well. It's an interesting audio to listen to. And I was fortunate enough to be able to do the reading on it. So I enjoyed that experience.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'd like to pick your brain more about that as well. I've been thinking about that myself. Now, tell me the full name of the title. I don't think I have it right.
Jackie, Ari, and Jack, The Tragic Love Triangle by January okay. Jones. Jackie, Ari, okay. and Jack, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jack, Ari, okay. And then also The Christina?
Yes, The Christina just came out this year, too, and that's a book I wrote, quite a few years ago, and I never had gotten around to publishing it. And basically, The Christina, it's celebrities, courtships, and chaos, the Onassis Odyssey. And I've written all about Aristotle Onassis and his life on this ship, the Christina, which was basically the center of his world. That's where he operated out. Then that's where he courted Jackie, and that's where they were on the ship a lot after they were married. It's all about the celebrities that everyone, it was quite a thing to be invited aboard the Onassis ship. They were the first jet setters, that crowd.
Sure.
So it's kind of a look back into the history of, you don't see that too often these days, that much celebrity hanging out with one man. He was one of the most powerful men in the world. He was very well connected with all of the countries, his shipping empire, and he also had connections to the drug world and the Golden Triangle in Asia. So he was, Kennedy forbid him to even come into the country before his assassination because he was such a character that they didn't want to associate with him. Then when Jack was killed that day, Onassis was invited to the White House by Jackie as his guest. He flew into the country on his own Olympic Airways, and the next thing you know, you have one man in a coffin in the East Room and his enemy in the guest room. And there we were at one of the most tragic days in the history of our country.
Wow. That is so fascinating to me. Are those the two books on the Kennedys? I was thinking there was a third one.
There is a third one. it's out of print. It's the first book that I did, Oh No, Jackie O.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
It's, I think you can still get it maybe on eBay or something like that. But that was my first book, and I self-published it, which was quite an experience.
Yeah. I've done that. It's a lot harder than you think.
Oh, yeah. And 20 years ago, it was even harder.
I'm sure. Okay, so those are the three. I couldn't remember if that was one or if there was another one after that. So, but you have this one that just came out. So I think you're good.
Yeah.
On these for now. So, okay, well, we are just about out of time here.
Okay.
So let's just end with you letting us know where we can find out more about you, read your books, and hear your radio show.
Wonderful. Well, you can go to www.januaryjones.com. If you sign on with your name and email, you can download the first two chapters of Priceless Personalities, all of my books, including Thou Shalt Not Whine, The 11th Commandment. And that book went to number one at Amazon. And it's a humor book, but interestingly enough, it went to number one in religion. So go figure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So all my books are available at Amazon and Audible.com. And I would love to have your listeners sign on to my website. I think they'll find it an interesting visit.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking this time with us. It was just really a pleasure to talk to you and to hear your experiences and your thoughts and your life. Is just a fascinating story to tell. And you, my friend, are a success.
Well, thank you. And you are too. And I hope to have you on my show soon.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, January.
Okay, have a nice day. Bye-bye.
You too.
All right, that's it for me. I will be back here again on Wednesday with another fabulous guest. In the meantime, you can find my books on Amazon. You can find earlier episodes of this podcast on iTunes. And as always, you can find me at ChristyTheWriter.com.